in the firelight, humming softly as she plaits her braids, and lying back smiling with her head on her little wooden pillow, holding out a hand to me. But if that first week had its idyllic moments, they ended when we crossed the Takazi and rode south into a new and horrible world. I've seen more war-scarred country than I care to remember, from the shattered ruin of the summer palace and the corpse-choked waters of the Sutlej to the putrid mud of the Crimea and the scorched highway blazed by Sherman from Atlanta to the sea. But what lay before us now was beyond description. Even the War of the Taipings, the bloodiest in human history, which seemed to carpet China with dead in heaps of countless thousands, was no more frightful than the charnel house that Theodore had made in Laster and Gondar and Begemda. From the river down to Lake Tana is more than 120 miles, and I doubt if we saw more than a score of living things in all that distance, bar vultures, hyenas, scorpions, and white ants, or a building whole and standing, except for some of the flat-roofed stone houses which the better-off inhabit. Of the normal, round-thatched homes of the populace, there wasn't one. Every village and farm was a cold, charred ruin in a vast graveyard, where skeletons, human and animal, lay in the rubble. The fields and plain had been swept clean of people and their beasts. In the wooded valleys of the high country, even the birds seemed to have gone, and we rode in an eerie silence. I dare say there were folk living in Makara and Sokar, small towns to which we gave a wide berth, as we did to the few ambers and adobe forts which showed signs of being occupied. I couldn't fathom it, for plainly this had been a well-inhabited, prosperous land. Where the devil had everyone gone?
"Most of them are dead," says Oliver. "This was rebel country, remember, and it is not Theodore's way to spare any who resist him, man, woman, or child. If we have seen none of Gobaiz's troops, it can mean only that they have gone south after Theodore, and doubtless the banditti have gone also, for what is left to steal in Laster?"
We had reined in on the outskirts of yet another ruined village, beside a little walled enclosure filled with a great pile of bones, many of them plainly belonging to infants. I ain't over queasy, as you know, but the thought of how they'd come to be there turned my stomach. Ulibar viewed them dispassionately.
"Thus Theodore wins the love of his people. You see now why Habesh rejoices in your British invasion. Whether it delivers your captives or not, it will surely destroy him."
"Amen to that," thinks I. Until that moment, I'd given little enough thought to this monster of an emperor and the atrocities he'd committed on his own people. You hear folk like Napier and Speedy talk of them, but it means nothing, and then you see him, at point blank, and can't conceive of such wickedness. Until you come to Gondar, that is, and find yourself contemplating hell on earth. It lay about 100 miles below the Takazi, and was once the capital of Abyssinia, a metropolis of 44 churches and a great royal palace, standing on a hill from which there was a magnificent prospect of Lake Tana, 40 miles away. For generations it had housed wealthy Muslim merchants and a revered priesthood, a magnet for traders from Egypt and the Sudan and the southern lakes, a city peaceful, flourishing and rich, which was its undoing. Theodore had taxed it exorbitantly, virtually holding it to ransom, and, not unnaturally, the city fathers had tended to sympathize with the rebels fleeing the emperor's vengeance and give them shelter. This much Ulibar told me as we came down towards it on the fifth day after crossing the river. I wondered if it would be safe to venture close to such a busy center, and she laughed on a bitter note.
"Over the ridge yonder we shall see great Gondar on its hill," says she. "And you can see how busy are its folk."
We topped the ridge, and sure enough, there was a distant rise crowned with buildings, some of them posing adobe and stone structures, so far as I could tell from far off, but the lower slopes were covered in the burned ruins of thousands of the thatched houses of the common folk. There was an odd smell in the air, not the foulness of corruption, but more like an aftermath of decay. musty and stale. There was no sign of life on the hill, or on the plain below it, which was empty, save for